Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
We've loaded them up. We've tried a number of different things. Long play calls, multiple plays at the line. We've dabbled here, tempo. We've dabbled here, there, and everywhere really throughout the springtime. And some comes a little bit more natural than others for them. But I do think we've seen them get better in really all facets. And so we'll have to sit down as a staff before we leave and when we come back just to make sure we're honed in on what direction we want to go all together. But I feel pretty confident the things that he's put on tape that we can go ahead and get after a little bit.
Mully and Haw, Dan Wiederer in this morning for David. Dan with the Chicago Tribune covers the Bears, does a great job of that, and your coverage is excellent between you and Bigsy, and now Sean Hammond has joined the crew, so that's fun to see, and it will be a really, I mean, it's right around the corner, I hate to tell you, because we've talked about what a bear season is when you're covering a team. It is it's the beginning of a very long kind of march to hopefully the playoffs, but you never know. I mean, this could be a year where the Bears improve quite a bit because of the guy we're just listening to there, Ben Johnson, but nothing guaranteed in that, on that front.
Well, first of all, we were at a gathering over the 4th of July weekend, and at least a half a dozen people reminded me how close the start of training camp is. And I said, listen, July 15th is when you're allowed to say that to me, because I'm still trying to squeeze the last drops of summer out before we check into camp. But I will say, listening to that clip from Ben Johnson reminded me of how smitten I was in the spring of listening to him at a podium talk about things. He's been, to this point, very detailed, very open. You learn something every day that he's up there. And I think we're all eager to get to House Hall and watch how his first training camp as a head coach unfolds. Obviously, the work with Caleb is at the top of the menu, and you heard from him there talking about how they dumped a lot on both Caleb and the entire offense in the spring, and now comes the point here in this little bridge where then you've got to kind of define what direction you want to go in July and August, and then articulate that when they get back and start establishing direction, because if you don't have direction by the time we get into mid to late August, we know where those seasons can end up, because we have both covered a lot of those seasons that end up places that we didn't want them to go.
I got to tell you, I think what's so impressive about what the Bears did in hiring Ben Johnson is that they got a guy who has a chance.
Yeah,
I don't want to say, oh, they got the greatest young coach. They got maybe the top dog on the market, right, in terms of young coach with a chance to be, whether you're a Sean McVay guy or you love you know, Shanahan, but he's got a chance to be that kind of a head coach. Mm-hmm. Doesn't guarantee anything, doesn't mean anything, but there are qualities to what, when you listen to him and when he talks about the game and how he seems to understand so much about professional football, that there are definitely real positives there. And the Bears, you know, went after the top dog, paid top dollar, and got the guy. Now, there are still other issues going on.
No question,
this is hardly a finished product, and you hear him talk about it. You know, you're throwing a lot of stuff on people, and you're waiting to see how well they can digest it. And how well, and I mean, I guess I'm talking about the quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to come down to the relationship between the coach and the quarterback at some point.
That's it. I'm writing a big training camp primer for the start of camp in a couple of weeks. And one of the main things in there is this person that I call Ben and Caleb, because they have to become one, right? Yep. Like, we're going to talk a lot about Ben Johnson's leadership. We're going to talk a lot about Caleb Williams' growth through training camp. But the synergy between the two of them is everything to where the season goes. And it's got to start immediately in the first practice of training camp and continue to build through July and August. Caleb Williams has raised his hand and said, I want to be coached really hard. And Ben Johnson has said, oh, yeah, watch this, right? Like, now you have to, you know the old saying in journalism, if your mother says she loves you, check it out, right? And so, like,
that's right.
Caleb says he wants to be coached hard. check it out. Let's see how hard he wants to be coaching. Can he handle some of the demands that Ben Johnson and his staff are going to put on him? They've got a long way to go. They think they've got a lot to work with the skill set.
Yeah.
And now it's all about kind of molding that offense around Caleb and not trying to take what was very successful for Jared Goff in Detroit and force it into Caleb's plate. And so that's going to be fascinating to kind of watch that evolve through the 6 weeks of camp. By the way, with a couple crossover practices at Hell's all mixed in, which I think will be really timely little almost progress reports on where the Bears are at.
Yeah, that's exactly what they are. And I mean, listen, there's not going to be big hitting sessions or anything like that when you have another opponent in and you're going to be playing a game against them. But it's something different when you're going through the kind of rigmarole of camp to have something different and to have something that you can kind of measure yourself against is a great. It's not, you know, everyone on the defense sees the same plays, and oftentimes they're forced to watch the same play because they don't really want them trying to take over. And it's tiresome. It is. It's boring and it's repetitive, and people get sick of it. And it's great to have a couple of little practices, just something different, a different look, something to get your juices going a little bit.
You get some of those one-on-one sessions that are really, really competitive. And then obviously some of the team stuff, you get to learn a little bit about where your flaws are. Look, like Ben's got really impressive leadership qualities to him. What I'm fascinated to see is how you make the initial impression that you made through April and May and early June, and now you have to get guys to uphold the standards that you've set, right? Like, it's very easy to set standards. It's much harder to uphold them, and they're going to have to do that day by day. I think he feels really confident with the coaching staff he's assembled, and from my reporting, you know, since he was hired, that seems to be the thing around the league that people are talking about, that this is a really sturdy assistant coaching staff, right? You've got a coordinator in Dennis Allen who can take the reins of the defense, and you don't have to lose sleep wondering whether he knows what he's doing.
Yes.
You've got guys around you with Antoine Randall-El, Eric Bieniemy on offense that can help steer the ship. There's some really, really good coaches here and a good blend of youth and experience that they're going to lean on. And Ben, I think, has to be aware that this head coaching job is different than anything he's ever done. And it's very different in a market like this where every word you say, every move you make will be scrutinized.
It was either his introductory news conference or shortly thereafter, he talked about the idea of the quarterback and the play caller having sort of the same vision of the field. And the only way you get to that was watching tape together.
Yeah.
He planned on breaking down a ton of tape where they can look at it together, talk it through, and Caleb can come to an understanding of the way the play caller is thinking the game.
I
thought that was excellent.
There's no question, and you have to do that in a setting that builds trust where neither side can be defensive, and you got to be really open-ended on like, hey, coach, this doesn't really work for me. I don't see it the way you do, and we can try to force feed this, but it's just not going to work. Or, hey, quarterback, like, these are the expectations, and when this play is designed, the ball's got to come out now, right? Like, you can't wait another second and a half. Otherwise, behind, and you're adding to that 68 sack total that you had as a rookie, and you've got to understand what the expectations are. And so I go back many, many times to what Ryan Poles said the day that Ben Johnson was introduced, where he said, Ben will challenge Caleb to be a professional football player. And it was like kind of this whoa moment where you're like, well, what is, you know, what happened last year?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And so now you've got a coach that's going to do that, and Caleb has to have buy-in. You can give him the excuses with Waldron and Eberflus, and now it's like, this has to work, dude.
Was it a wasted year for his career?
I hate saying wasted year because I think all these experiences are growth oriented, you know, and like, I think Caleb was in some moments last year where we got to see the late game hunger and like the late game, this isn't too big for me moment. We talked for years about Justin Fields not meeting those moments with the game on the line, and Caleb did that a few times last year. Obviously, they had a field goal blocked against the Packers, didn't get a game-winning drive there. They didn't end up winning the game in overtime when they scored two touchdowns in the last couple minutes there. But you saw him rise up and meet those moments. They don't forget, they scored a touchdown late in the Washington game after having putrid offense for three quarters. They took the lead in the final seconds of
right.
that game.
They won the game.
Right,
they,
yeah, right.
Then they found a way to lose.
And
it
so, like, those things are not wasted because those build belief in your teammates. Those build belief in yourself that, you know, I can do this on this level. And that's what this position comes down to so often. Once you master everything else, it's like, okay, here's the fourth quarter. Here's the last 7 minutes. It's a one-score game. Go do something with it. Make sure we walk out of here with a win. And I think getting those experiences for Caleb were really beneficial.
And I think that we've heard the hunger to be coached and all that stuff from him. I don't know how to say this because I want to be careful, but he has always had like a supportive coaching situation.
Sure.
And that's, he went to Oklahoma and he transferred to USC because he was connected to a coach that he felt was there for him and supporting him. And he struggled at different times. It wasn't all perfect. Won the Heisman as a junior. Struggled in his senior year. Was that his junior year? I lose track of life. But anyway, comes out, gets to the NFL, and here he is. And all of a sudden, the support system doesn't seem like it's working. Feels like the Bears are a mess.
Yeah.
And I just wonder how hard coaching or how – you know, does Ben Johnson is a math guy. He's a science guy. He's a technology guy. He's the, you know, not that he doesn't have humanity, but he wants this, and this, and look at it like this, and this. And I don't know that he's going to be there with a lifesaver.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, son, like, suck on a lifesaver. You'll feel better about life.
Right.
I don't know that he's that kind of feel good, you know, lovey-dovey. Kinda.
You're all over it. I mean, you are. You're all over it. This is going to be fascinating to see how those personality types mesh, and they've got to build trust quickly because it is a thing where both sides are going to have to give a little bit, but they are going to be who they are going to be. And you've got to make that work somehow. And you know, I think it was Cole Kmet who said in the spring that Ben isn't detail oriented. He's obsessed with details.
Yes.
Like to a level where it's like, oh God, like there may be some OCD in here with how precise he wants every little piece of the offense. But I've said that Ben comes in with the credibility of, hey guys,
Number one offense in the league.
Let me show you the 68 touchdowns we scored last season in Detroit. And let me tell you why I'm obsessed with the details, because this is the results it produces. And boy, did the people in Detroit have a lot of fun last year watching that weekly fireworks show of touchdown, 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 touchdown all over the field. So there's a method to the madness.
Yes.
You've just got to get it to resonate with each individual player, and in particular with the quarterback. And I think what you're hinting at there is whether Caleb can thicken his skin enough to take some really, really abrasive coaching at times, right?
Yes.
Like, it's going to need to be abrasive for the Bears to get this thing launched properly.
One of the great moments of the offseason is, you know, the early part of what we've seen is he's got to get rid of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I got to tell you, there are so many times when you were watching them and you were – we talked to Jim Miller at one point, the former Bears quarterback, our Jim Miller, and he was saying – that when you watch the play where DJ walks off the field and sits down, the reason he did it is because he's on the sidelines waiting for the football, which should be in his hands, and Caleb hasn't released it yet. And he knows that the moment's gone, and he's frustrated, and he walks off the field and sits down. Now, I want to run that by DJ if we get a chance to do that, and we've saved the cut because we want to play it for him. But I think that's probably an accurate description of exactly what happened at that point. And again, you got a rookie quarterback and you got a veteran receiver, and it's true. Like, you got to get rid of the ball, and you know, it's great. You're not throwing picks, but you can't take that many sacks. That's a bad idea. And he took a lot of sacks in part because he didn't get rid of the ball as quickly as you need to in the NFL. And it, like, your athletic ability will allow you to extend a play, to move around in the college game. I don't know that the speed of players in the league allows you to do those sort of things. Now, he had some great freelance moments. I'm not saying
he didn't. Yeah.
But you can't live like that in the NFL.
You can't live like that. You have to have that in your bag of tricks, but you can't live like that. And I think that's been a consistent theme from anybody not attached to the Bears, who's watched Caleb Williams extensively and said, like, this is really special stuff that you do. You can't make it your go-to weapon on every play, on every drive. You've got to be able to live within structure. You've got to understand timing. You've got to understand that this offense that you're going to play in a lot of times is going to be take the snap, get ball to playmaker, let playmaker get you 8 yards, and then and let's see what's next on the call sheet, right? And so that, like, that's going to be some of the rhythm that Ben and Caleb have to find together. And Caleb's going to have to understand this is the whole concept of command at the quarterback position in the NFL is every single play has its own set of demands, and you have to know when you break that huddle what this play needs to do for you. And again, like, when it comes time to put on the cape and do the special things, go do them, but understand that when the play is called, it is for a specific purpose, and you better be aware of what that purpose is and go get it. The other thing with Ben that I love, and I love talking to him about this in the spring, is this, you know, Detroit concept of going for it on fourth down all the time.
Yes.
Once you ingrain that into your identity, it also changes who you are on third down. Because if it's third and eight, 5 yards is fine.
Yeah.
Because you know you can go to fourth and three, and you have your call sheet and the things you can lean on. And so now all of a sudden, third and long doesn't become as stressful. It's like, okay, we can live with this check down for 5 yards because we know we've got something in our back pocket that's going to pick up the first down on fourth and shorter. And, you know, so that's going to be interesting to see how they kind of navigate that as well, because I think that is part of Ben's DNA, and he's going to bring that to Chicago pretty quickly.
That's fascinating to me. Are you saying that it's not Dan Campbell that's the riverboat gambler?
I think it's a combination of the two of them, right? And that's why it worked so well, is because they both believed in the same things. But I do think that Ben loves the idea of, like, yeah, let's screw it. We're going for it here. We know the situation. We're very confident in who we are. Yeah. And you can do that when you've got the league's best offense. It's going to be interesting if they are just a middle tier offense, how aggressive they stay.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
To me, like, one of the great things about what Ben Johnson does is play action.
Mm-hmm.
And I never understood why they couldn't do more play action. It didn't make any sense to me, because it will buy you a couple of seconds. It will buy you the chance to make a big play, a play down the field.
No question.
And I think that now you're going to that, but you're doing it, you don't have kind of the running, you got the 20th running back in the league, let's say.
I was going to say,
discussed earlier. So I don't know, you know, and you got a quarterback that hasn't been underneath center. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, it is, you know, I don't know how to feel. I love the idea of it, but are we understanding of what the issues are here before you get to that point?
You're, as a trained journalist, you're doing the journalistic exercise before the tidal wave of high pitch training camp, right? Because this is all of it, right? Like, you bring up another point about Caleb still working on his comfort working under center, you know, and how that has to marry up with mesh points in a play action game and all the things that come with that. And so a lot of this stuff is very much work in progress.
Yes.
And I think that the fan base here expects this to be ready-made. Put it in the microwave. Yeah. Let's go by the first preseason game. The offense is a finished product. And I think we consistently warn that, like, you know, be prepared for some bumps in the road until Halloween, right? Like, as you're trying to get everything acclimated, the play action thing is going to be a staple of this offense. There's no question.
Yeah.
And it has to be behind a running game that is effective, and a running game has to be effective with these three interior guys that you brought in to help save the day for your quarterback, but who also have to be grinders in the running game to get that thing moving.
Yeah, I think that's going to be one of the funner things about training camp, is you're finally going to see these guys in pads.
Yeah.
And I mean both sides of the line of scrimmage. You know, the problem the Bears had is they did not win the line of scrimmage. That was a huge problem for them a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how well they're set up to do that. And I think they are. I think they've improved.
Yeah.
And they've got some veteran players. I think they'll be good at it. But, you know, Joe Tooney, a guy like that should solidify a lot of this. You got a center you're paying big dollars to. That should help solidify some of this. I don't know that I trust everything to work out without any kind of, the whole Ozzie thing and how cool it is. Oh my God, he's going to be a left tackle. Look, they got a left tackle. Tap the brakes on that one a little bit. I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm just saying that's not how the guy was sold.
Sure.
Maybe they saw something different, but I'm not sure he's a left tackle to begin with.
He better be.
Well, he's going to have to be.
Because you used premium draft capital. That's
no
a round two
it.
Pick. That's not day three. That's not Braxton Jones day three flyer. We're gonna see if this works. And you know, hey, it did work for a couple of years, and we got serviceable play out of it. Like, you have to find yourself a starting left tackle pretty quickly. And you know, they've been very forthright at Hal's Hall and saying, look, like, we don't want this to drag out through the entire month of August. We want to know who our five are and then be able to build from there. And you bring up another point. What does offensive line depth look like here?
Right.
You know, that tackle position, we don't know Braxton Jones' situation. We don't know what Karan Amagaji looks like in a training camp. We don't know much about Ozzie Trapillo. So
now, you want to talk about prime draft capital. There's a guy, Amagaji, that you used a high pick on because you thought he was something, and there's no evidence to that at all. And
not
it
yet.
Doesn't mean it can't work.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he can't be that. It just means it's not shown. And Braxton Jones is hurt, by the way. He's got to build his body up, but he's got a leg issue. Don't worry about it. It'll all work out.
You're going to be looking at an injury report on report day where you're going to be like, what's going on here, right? Like, is Colson Loveland clear for full activity?
Yeah.
What's the story with Luther Burden? How is Braxton Jones doing? Do we know if Kyler Gordon is going to be able to participate in an entire training camp? It looks like, from things I've seen on social media, that he's been back up and running after missing a good portion of the offseason program. But that injury report's going to be a daily watch list with some of those high-profile names that are already there. And then, obviously, you know as well as anyone that when camp goes on, there's always additions, and then it tests who you are.
All right, we'll get back to some of this. We've got Mike DeCourcy next. We're going to talk to him. It's Mully and Haw with Dan Weiderer on the Score.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall is back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
Aim will clip it long. Downs trying to get there. He might. Ajabong trying to get in. Ajabong gets popped in the air. It's partially cleared by Vasquez. Ruiz gets it wide. There, Aronson trying to play in for Downs. And then Downs takes a hard kick. That's it. Final whistle. Mexico back-to-back at the CONCACAF Gold Cup.
Mully and Haw, Dan Weiderer filling in this morning. Dan from the Tribune, and we are delighted to welcome in our friend Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News. He covered the Gold Cup, the U.S. losing to Mexico in the final, and Mike joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Good morning, Michael. How are you, sir?
I am well, Mully. How are you?
You know, I love the international game, and I did watch this tournament, and I think that the key to it is just this idea that the U.S. Doesn't have much time with the manager, right? There's not a lot of prep time. There's not a lot of really important games because of hosting the World Cup next year with Mexico and Canada. There's no need for qualification. You automatically qualify. And that's dangerous. It's a dangerous position to be in. Now you get to the Gold Cup, and it was really weird because all the European-based players are pretty much unavailable. They just got through a season, and guys weren't reporting, or they had injuries, or they just needed a break. So you see more of the domestic players. What was your takeaway from what we saw at the Gold Cup?
Yeah, it's been like a 2-month drama here with regards to the Gold Cup, and there had been a thought coming out of the disappointment of March when they lost in the Nations League that okay, the Gold Cup will give them a chance to get together and get some things right. But the fact that the FIFA has the Club World Cup running at the same time, almost exactly concurrently, took three players, basically close to a third of the starting lineup, depending on how you feel about Gio Reyna, a third of the starting lineup out. And then there were injuries. Ricardo Pepi significantly injured. Jedi Robinson coming off an injury that maybe wasn't overwhelming, but that was better off with the rest. And then it just started to add up. And at a certain point, it didn't make any sense from Christian Pulisic's point of view for him to get involved because it's basically a 6-week commitment. He would have basically been playing soccer. He ended up showing up in LA next year on June 12th, having played almost three consecutive years of soccer with about 8 to 9 weeks of break in between all of that. And it made no sense. If he was going to be playing with a bunch of guys who probably are borderline World Cup players, it just didn't make any sense. And so you were left with a team that was largely playing for roster spots and maybe a role. And Malik Tillman would be an exception to that. He's a guy who's fighting now for a starting spot. And of course, in central defense, they had both of the apparent current starters. Chris Richards was terrific all the way through the tournament. Mm. Tim Ream does his best. And I just think that at a certain point, I mean, he's not LeBron James. I mean, LeBron can still go out and average 25 and 8 and 7. But Tim Ream is a step slower. He was always a step slow, and now he's 38. So I think that it would have been nice to use that experience to figure out if there was someone other than Tim Ream they could have used, but instead they kept putting him out there. And he was a little bit late on the goal that tied the game on Sunday. He's going to be even a year older from that now when we get to the World Cup.
Mike, great to talk to you. With what you saw in the Gold Cup, what is the desired response now? What would you like to see from your vantage point to get things pointed in the right direction?
Well, they have two friendlies in September, one against South Korea, which will be in New Jersey at the Red Bull Arena where the New York Red Bulls play, and then a second in Columbus against Japan. So those are two very important games Mauricio Pochettino was rejecting this notion. We all know, if you really want to be serious about winning next year, and I'm not saying winning the World Cup, but winning in the World Cup, you've got to get the regulars back in there and get them oriented toward the way Pochettino wants to play. And one of the things I said in my column off of Sunday's game is, we still don't really know what that is. I mean, he's mixed things up a little bit, and playing with different players than in this tournament than he ordinarily would. We don't know exactly how he would want to arrange and compete with the best players the U.S. has to offer. So they really need that September window, and he's kind of got to stop playing semantic games and get those guys on the field and onto the same page.
Did any of these players proved to be starters? Do you know what I'm saying, Mike? When Diego Luna got a ton of press and had a couple goals in one game, but when you think about Weston McKennie and Yunus Musa and you know Tillman, Adams, I just don't know where you are with whether or not he's doing enough to actually be a starter come World Cup time.
Well, it's interesting, Molly, because Luna and Musa are an interesting comparison because Musa, in a certain type of system, is wonderful at possessing the ball and carrying the ball and moving the ball from back to front. But there's not a lot else there. He doesn't create much, not in terms of crosses, not in terms of passes that would lead directly to goals. Luna is a very creative player. And I thought he hustled a lot in this tournament. He wasn't as good on Sunday. I think they gave him a lot of defensive responsibility on Sunday. It would have been better for them to put someone else out there behind him other than Luca Della Torre, who I don't think is a significant contributor to this team at this point. He got a lot of minutes in this tournament without getting a lot done. So that really increased Luna's workload, and he wasn't able to contribute much to the offense. I sort of think that he still is a very useful player, and that there may be times and opponents when he could start and contribute. I would say in general, he looks like a guy that you bring on late in games to try to conjure something if you need a goal to tie or you feel like you can put him out there in a tie game and maybe create something to win.
Mike, I saw Alexi Lalas said that he felt like there was a new identity that was found recently with his team. Do you agree with that? Do you feel like there is a new identity needed? And if so, has it been established with the direction they're trying to go?
Well, what happened to the prior administration, so to speak, was after Greg Berhalter had the circumstance regarding Gio Reyna at the 2022 World Cup. It was basically Pulisic and the others who saved his job. And they by saying, look, we're happy with this guy. We think he's good. We think we're going in the right direction. And all of that was really true coming out of 22 before the whole thing with Reyna happened. But once they saved his job, they did sort of start to act like the school kids in class that were working with a bigger hand. So you saw stuff like Timothy Weah getting ejected from Copa America last summer, and we saw the same with Sergiño Dest in the Nations League qualifying level. And those things can't happen in major tournaments. So you can't get mad and hit somebody. Or in the case of Dest, get mad and kick the ball into the stands in games that really matter. And so he kind of lost his authority, so they needed a change. And reestablishing that authority, Pochettino hasn't really had a great chance to do it. And I think he used this Gold Cup as a chance to say, I'm in charge. And all you guys who think you're getting called in because you're with big clubs, that's not the case anymore. But we saw what the result was. It was a really good, energetic, hard-working team, but it's not a good enough team,
right,
that played in the Gold Cup. So that's the problem. That's the dichotomy that American soccer is in, and I don't know that this tournament solved that, because if you just said, okay, if you guys don't buy in, we're going to roll these other guys out, they're going to struggle to get out of their group.
The last World Cup, they brought three forwards with them, and they didn't know who to play, right? I'm talking about strikers, and they didn't have a goal scorer. Where are you at? Is Balogun still the guy when he comes back? Did they discover something here? I just don't know. That's kind of been the boogeyman position in a way, having a real goal scorer created. We're great with goalkeepers, but not scorers.
Yeah, that's been a problem. I really like Ricardo Pepi and where he was headed. It'd be nice if he was in a situation where he was a regular starter. He just happens to be with a team that has a player who they either favor or might be slightly better. But Ricardo had a really good year until he got hurt in Holland. And then you've got some other options as well. So I think the problem is just getting them out there healthy. Balogun missing this tournament, would have been really nice to have him. Patrick Ajimang mm-hmm. from Charlotte is a really hardworking guy. And I mean, there were guys hanging on him, defenders hanging on him throughout the Mexico game. And he kept working and kept working. But he's not – I don't know that anybody's skilled enough to deal with the amount of physical load he had to carry, but he's certainly not. And so you learned that he could be maybe a useful sub if you don't have all your healthy players. But I'm not sure they wouldn't have been better off if they brought Josh Sargent, who they didn't even bring to the team, and see if you could finally translate his club goal scoring into national team goal scoring.
I just think there's such little time left before the World Cup, and we have no idea. I mean, Mauricio Pochettino is an excellent manager. We know what he's done at club level. We know that he's been excellent. I just don't know what he's going to do with this group, and I don't know who the group is, and I don't know how they're going to – you know, Dest is a really good player, and, you know, Weah is a good player, and Pulisic's a good player, and, you know – Robinson, this is supposed to be a generation that can contend, Mike. I just don't know how they're going to do it if they can't actually play any games that matter before they are suddenly representing the U.S. at a World Cup.
Well, remember, every World Cup team doesn't have to qualify. Going back, South Africa, Qatar, Germany, whoever it might be. And those teams do tend to do well even without that competition. And that goes including to 94 when the U.S. didn't play any meaningful games other than the Olympics in 92, and that wasn't really the full national team. So between 90 and 94, and they just they worked themselves into a really good team. Now, this is not the same circumstance. There aren't as many windows as you'd like. There is one in September. I think there's one in October. I know there's one in November. And then You have one next springtime in March, and then you've got the pre-cup time. So they have to use that time wisely, and they have to use it efficiently. And again, that's why I think you said, like, okay, we've got these other guys. It's clearly you're not going to play this 11
right.
in next summer in L.A. But hey, if Weah doesn't work or Musa doesn't work, Luna can play. Tillman is probably now the starter, and that's a motivator for Gio Reyna.
Yeah.
And then you look all the way through the lineup. Honestly, the one thing I came out of this tournament disappointed with, and I think it is more about role than anything, was Tyler Adams. I was not happy with his performance, although I still think it was him being played somewhat out of position, not in his most comfortable role. But you got to get him back because when they were at their best, he was a very important player to that.
Great stuff, Mike. Thank you. A lot of fun. Appreciate
it. Mully and Dan, thank you. I enjoyed it.
All righty. That is Mike DeCourcy. That's fun stuff. I mean, we're a year away. It's going to be like the biggest story going.
Yeah.
And you know, what the heck? all right. We've got a lot left. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Hall. We got Dan Wiederer here on The Score.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Down.
I'm down.
Here we go.
Smokes this one to right center. And it is gone! We are down. Seiya Suzuki. Another homer. Another RBI, and another reason to get him in the home run derby.
My work here is done.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Cubs back in action tonight. Just curious if you believe that that an all-star snub will somehow fuel some of these players. Listen. You know, you got a guy just named the NL co-player of the week, and he's on a tear. He's hitting home runs, and he's hitting everything. So I don't know that is motivation. I don't know if he feels like he should have been on this team. I think the problem with the All-Star game is that every team has to be represented.
Yeah.
So for instance, if I asked you Brendan Donovan versus Nico Hoerner, who would you take? Who would you rather have on your team?
Yeah.
Well, one guy's an all-star and the other guy didn't make it because he's ahead of him somehow, because you got to have a representative of every team.
Right.
So I just think it's really difficult. And I love the Shane Smith story. It's a great story, but I don't know that he belongs on the all-star team. And I know that sounds very cruel, but I'm just looking at it from a perspective of how bad a team is. The White Sox were terrible a year ago, worst team ever, but Garrett Crochet deserved to be in the All-Star game and has proven to be. He's back this year with the Red Sox. So I think you really would prefer to have guys that make the team than feeling like you have to have a representative. And as a result, you're not going to get everybody on your team. You know, Seiya Suzuki should be an all-star. Does that mean he's going to tear it up over the final six games before the all-star break just to show everyone? Like, I don't know how that motivates you. Does that motivate you?
I don't think so. Particularly with this Cubs team, as we talked about earlier, I think that there's such bigger fish to fry in this season that I think the motivation is getting this ball club in position to, again, to think that they can play deep into October. And so I think, you know, guys like Seiya, guys like Bush are just trying to keep producing on a level that keeps the wins coming up. You know, like they're on this hot streak as a team over the last week. And I think that's motivation more than anything having to do with the All-Star game, is to keep momentum flowing into the All-Star break so that when you come back out of it, you feel like, okay, now we're positioned to make this run on the second half of the season.
And I agree with you. I think the problem that I'm having somewhat, just talking to friends of mine about the Cubs, is that all they don't want to talk about, you know, Kyle Tucker and PCA. You know, there's been a lot of talk about that, but they want to talk about who they're going to get,
mm-hmm.
how they yeah. can get it, who they're going to lose in order to get it, and how that's going to impact them moving forward. And you're kind of like, man, you know, there's plenty of time for that. I get it. I think yeah. they need to make I'll say it this way without really meaning it, a secondary move. And by that, I just mean they need some immediate help.
For sure.
But they also need like some really good help.
Yeah.
If they're going to win this thing. And that's the question, is whether they believe, and it certainly looks like they're good enough to be able to knock around some teams and score some runs
right.
and do some things. And they had an excellent year in the bullpen and the pitching has held up. But is it playoff pitching? Do they need like a playoff pitcher?
Yes.
And you do feel that they're short in that area mm-hmm. when it comes to winning a World Series. So you've shifted your focus from making the playoffs to making noise in the playoffs.
100%. And I think that's really important to distinguish, because you can't turn your nose up at opportunity. And they've given themselves opportunity here. And
yep.
I think when that opportunity is sitting there, you can't just go, oh, well, you know, we'll figure it out later. It's no, this is right in front of you right now. This season has gone almost as well as it could have. You take out the injury to Steele and Shota being out for a little while, it's almost been a best case scenario across the board for the Cubs beyond that. And so when you're staring at that, you have to say, let's do everything we can to get this season to its maximum potential. And I think the maximum potential is playing at least in the NLCS, right? And potentially dreaming of getting hot in that week and seeing if you can go beyond that.
And I mean, that is why, generally speaking, we think that a general manager is going to win the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
And it may happen, you know, before July 31st,
yeah.
right? That's kind of what everyone is thinking, that you've gotten to a point where you're doing very well and you feel like you're in control and you're going to win the division. It's not over by any
right.
account. And we've seen teams struggle at different points, but the Cubs have been just excellent all year long. And now it's almost up to Jed. And when I say Jed, I mean Tom
right.
behind him. I mean, it's almost now up to what move do you make to ensure that you win the division, to ensure that you're going to have a shot come playoff.
Right, and then what moves, plural, do you make
yes.
to make the biggest splash? And I think that's where this is going to be fascinating over the next 3 weeks, is to see what's available to them. You know, what's your risk-reward calculus with some of the guys that are out there that maybe not producing, you know, Sandy Alcantara being one of those guys that, do you want to roll
that's
those
scary.
Dice? Yeah,
yeah.
It is. It's
yeah,
scary, but it's also a guy that you say, okay, if we yeah. got the best out of him, now does he you know, give us something that we don't currently have? I go back to the Taillon injury right now is something that's going to put some short-term strain on them to figure
no
things
question.
Out with both their rotation and the bullpen. And so, look, you're going to get the All-Star break coming in a good time, but you still have to come up with solutions for all these things. And that's pressure on the front office to make shrewd moves.
Bruce Levine joins us next. We'll ask Bruce, what are they going to do and when they doing it and what's happening and how you doing, man? Bruce Levine next. Mullion Haw, Dan Weider on Score.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.